Daniel chapter 1. And a few months ago when I was speaking, I spoke about how hopefully everybody here wants to be faithful to God with the big things of their lives. You know, for what are the big things of our lives? There are times where we have big choices that we have to make in life, and we don't always have a lot of opportunity to practice making the big choices because they don't come at us every day. An example of a big choice that you may have to make is, you know, those of us that grow up in Christian families, we all grow up one day, and there comes a time where we make our own choices on whether or not we're going to follow the Lord, and our parents, what our parents want matters less and less, and it becomes more and more a function of our own choices, whether or not we're gathering with the Lord's people, whether or not we're participating in certain behaviors and certain lifestyle choices. Our parents have their input still, but the day comes where we have to make our own choices, and you know, eventually your parents die, so you know they're going to be gone eventually. And you know, you have to make your own choices. Hey, it's true. You have to make your own choices in life. And so we know that big choices are going to come on us someday. We don't always know when they're going to hit us. We can't always practice for them in advance, but if we want to make the right choices with the big things in our lives, one of the best ways at least that we can practice is to be faithful to God in the little things of our lives. Because if we're faithful to God in little things of our lives, in the day-to-day things, if we focus on honoring God with, you know, everyday decisions, that will play out and help us to make the right choices when we come to the big decisions. And that's the best way we can practice. So then, the last few weeks or times I spoke, I was speaking about ways that things that we can do to help us be faithful to God with the little things in our lives, because that's not always as easy as it sounds either. So we're going to continue tonight talking about something else we can do to be faithful to God in the little things of our lives, to help us be faithful to God with the little things of our lives. And tonight we're going to talk about the importance of having purpose of heart, having strong purpose of heart. And our first verse that we're going to read is found in Daniel chapter 1 in verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So what does it say here? Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Daniel had an objective here, and his objective was, I cannot defile myself. I have to honor the Lord with what I eat and what I drink. I can't do anything to defile myself. And he had purpose of heart. He decided this before the food was ever set before him, before the wine was ever set before him. He had this objective that he would not defile himself with what he ate or drank. Let's just read this verse one more time. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. So his objective here is that he does not want to defile himself. Whatever happens, Daniel wants to remain faithful to the Lord's law, that he not eat certain types of foods, that he not eat food sacrificed to idols or unclean foods. Daniel doesn't want to disobey the Lord in this, even though he's under horrible circumstances when he's been dragged off to Babylon. But if we go down to verse 12, we'll notice how Daniel plans on carrying out this objective. And Daniel says to the chief, or to the guy that has been set over them, he says in verse 12, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. So what is Daniel's plan here? How's he going to bring about this objective that he'd not defile himself? His plan is he's only going to eat vegetables and he's only going to drink water. That is how he's going to accomplish this. And he sort of draws this line for himself and says, this is where I'm going to stop. I am not going to eat any meat. I'm just going to eat vegetables and drink water. And why does he do this? Because he has a higher objective, to not defile himself. Now, is there territory on the other side of Daniel's line which would have been right for him? And the answer is yes. He would not have defiled himself if he had eaten clean animals that were not sacrificed to idols. God clearly allowed them to eat meat in Israel, but Daniel draws this line here to keep himself from defiling himself, And there is right territory on the other side of the line. But Daniel has this higher objective in mind, that he's not going to defile himself. And he has purpose of heart. He draws this line for himself, saying, I'm going to stop right here and not cross over, because if I do that, I can make sure I don't defile myself. Now, if Daniel had drawn the line somewhere else where, you know, he's like, I'm only going to eat meats that are clean, meats that are right, it would have gotten very hard for him in this situation. For one, most of the meat, if not all of it, was sacrificed to idols in Babylon, and Daniel probably wasn't going to be there to see how the animal was killed. If he's back home in Israel, virtually none of the meat, well, okay, maybe a lot of it was still sacrificed to idols, but if Daniel was in a believing household that did not participate in this, he wouldn't have to worry about it. They weren't going to be sacrificing this meat to idols, and they weren't going to be putting unclean meat on the plate in front of him. But in Babylon, he can't keep an eye on what's been sacrificed to idols and what's not. He can't determine all the time what kind of meat is being put before him and eating it, and he does not want to defile himself whatever he does. So it would have been hard for him if he had drawn the line somewhere else. When he draws this line with just water and vegetables, he knows 100% that he's not going to defile himself with water and vegetables. And, you know, if he had drawn the line somewhere else, not only would it have been hard for him to determine what's right and what's wrong for him to eat, but he would have to do it in circumstances that were less than ideal. Let me tell a story. You know, if he had to wait till the meat was set before him or the food was set before him and think, is it okay for me to eat this or is it not okay? It would have gotten hard for him. Let me just tell a story to illustrate this. One time when I was in college, I went backpacking in the Appalachian Mountains with some of my friends. And, you know, I talked up this thing where we were going to get these huge steaks. We were going to put them in the freezer, freeze them. And we had this styrofoam cooler that we filled with ice and steaks. And, you know, portable freezer, and we had these big juicy steaks in there, and we tied the cooler to a stick and kind of carried it Ark of the Covenant style as we hiked up the mountain. So, you know, the first night we got out of our cars, we only hiked like 1 mile, 2 miles into the up the trail, then, you know, spent the night. And then we hiked the next day lugging this thing. Everyone was really angry at me while we were lugging it, but then in the evening when we got to our campsite, you know, we found a nice place on the side of the trail to stay, and we built a fire, and we started cooking this meat. And we were so hungry from walking all day that it was all we could do to not have very rare steak that night. You know, we were about to eat it raw almost because we were so hungry, and it smelled so good. And, you know, we were also fighting with each other over whose piece of meat was what as it cooked, and, like, all these fights are breaking out. We're really hungry. We really want to eat this. And, you know, at the end of the day, it turned out that the fights were stupid because we had so much meat, we kind of had to burn it because we couldn't eat it all, and we were all waddling around, first because we hiked all day with backpacks, second because we ate so much steak, we just couldn't eat anymore, you know. But if Daniel was in the situation where he had worked really hard all day, and he's really hungry, and someone puts meat in front of him, and it smells really good, and he's just ravished, and then he has to decide, is this meat right or wrong? That is going to skew his judgment. It's going to be hard for him to decide in that situation, should I eat this meat or should I not? Whereas if Daniel has purpose of heart ahead of time and he has a clear line in his mind, you know, Daniel took a very safe and conservative line here. You know, it wouldn't have been wrong for him to move the line forward some, or there's territory there that's not wrong, but he takes a safe line and gives up, you know, eating clean meat, because he remembers his higher objective. I cannot defile myself, whatever happens. And, you know, when he gets into a situation where, you know, he's famished and there's good smelling meat, he's not trying to make the decision. Is it okay for me to eat this meat or is it not okay? When his judgment is skewed by these outside influences, he's already made his decision. Is it a vegetable? Okay, I eat it. Is it meat? I'm not going to eat it here in Babylon. And so Daniel has purpose of heart, and he draws this line for himself. And, you know, he knows where the line is, and he's not trying to make that decision in the heat of the moment. Now, let's look at an example more relevant to us. We're not forbidden to eat certain types of food, we're not exactly wondering if food's been sacrificed to idols for us. You know, it's a little bit different. But there are related situations. And one I could think of was the issue of alcohol, which is a very, common issue. It seems like most people in my generation, even if their parents had nothing to do with alcohol, the majority of them are very friendly towards it, in my experience. I'm like the biggest holdout in the world on this, but a lot of people have gotten really friendly with it. And one of the reasons why I'm very unfriendly towards it is, people will argue with you saying, you can't prove from the Bible that it is wrong to drink alcohol. Jesus drank wine. All this stuff like that. But one thing that we do know is that if you drink too much alcohol, you enter into sin when you become drunk. That's very clear in the Bible. And, just like Daniel doesn't want to eat defiled food, whatever we do, we have to make sure that we don't cross the line to the point where we become drunk, which is a vague term with a vague line. Anytime there's a lot of debate among people about topics like what is drunk and what is not drunk, that tells you right there, it's hard to draw the line exactly. And in these situations, the time to figure out whether you're going too far is not when you've already started drinking a bunch of alcohol and then thinking you're going to have good judgment when you're under the influence of alcohol to determine, am I going too far or not too far? So, me personally in my life, I took the Daniel approach on this one and said, if you take zero, you're safe, you're good, you're not going to cross the line. And, purposed in my heart not to cross this line and mess with it at all. Where you enter into wrong territory and right territory, that's up for debate, highly up for debate. But we do know, if you don't have a firm line in your mind on where you're going to stop, you're going to enter into sin at times. Like, I strongly doubt you're going to never go too far and get drunk, and you're going to sin against the Lord. And just like Daniel, maybe most of the time he could have prevented eating defiled food, and he would have gotten it right 90% of the time. It's more important to Daniel to get it right 100% of the time to the best of his ability than it is for him to dabble in this stuff, especially when he's in Babylon where, he's not going to get it right. And so Daniel has this line in advance, and it's helpful to us to draw these lines in advance in our own lives as well, and to know what we think about issues before we're in the heat of the moment. Issues like alcohol, if you think you're going to drink a few glasses of alcohol or something and then try to make the decision when to stop or not, your judgment will be skewed. You're not going to know when you're crossing into sin and when you're not. But if we think through it in advance, if we purpose in our hearts, this is where I'm going to stop, and there might be right territory across my line where I draw the line. There might be right territory over there, but I'm going to draw the line where I know that I will not enter into sin. This will help us to do what is right. Let's turn over to Daniel chapter 6 and look at another example from Daniel's life of where he had purpose of heart ahead of time on what he was going to do. So in Daniel chapter 6, this is the famous chapter about Daniel in the lion's den, and we know that the other governors didn't really like Daniel. They wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to, kill him. So they noticed that every single day, three times a day, he prays and makes supplication before the Lord. So they passed this law to make that illegal, to see what he does. And down in verse 10, we read, "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." Notice that last phrase, "since early days." This was his custom since early days. This is what he'd always done. And, I think it's a safe assumption that Daniel somewhere made this commitment to himself: no matter what's happening in my life, I'm going to pray and make supplication to God three times a day, just like this. This is what I'm going to do. And he had purpose of heart that this is what he was going to do. And, it didn't matter what outside influences there were on his life. He didn't wait until after a law was passed that said, you're going to die if you pray to God. Where other things were pressuring him. He made this decision beforehand. You know, I'm going to pray and make supplication to God, and this is what I'm going to do. And he had purpose of heart and determined to do this in advance so that he wasn't pushed around by the king's law concerning this matter. I remember back when I went to college, and, you know, I kind of personally chopped my life into two segments. There's before I went to college and after I went to college. Before I went to college, I lived at home with my parents. Great childhood, no complaints. After I went to college, you know, moved out from under my parents' wing, you know, Laura starts being a factor in my life, all this big change happens, things are different. And one of the things that I did when I went to college was, you know, I made this commitment that I was, every morning, before I went to my first class, I kind of got up an hour early. You know, usually it took me a whopping 2 minutes to go out the door from the time I woke up to the time I walked out the door, because, you know, that's one of the reasons you should have short hair if you're a guy, you know, you don't mess with your hair in the morning. But, you know, I would get up an hour early, and I used to live on North Campus, for those of you who know where that is, all the way out by 193. And my first class was in the armory, so I'd walk all the way across the campus with my Bible an hour earlier than I needed to get to my first class. And I'd go to the steps of the chapel, and I would read my Bible and pray every single morning. And, you know, I made this commitment that this is what I'm going to do. I don't care how tired I am, because I found in my life, you know, if I said, oh, I'll spend time with God in the afternoon or something like that, I personally would, stuff comes up, stuff hits you, you get distracted, people start wanting to talk to you and do something with you and stuff, and you get very distracted, and it doesn't always happen. But I knew, okay, if I do it in the morning, everyone else in College Park is asleep until at least 11 o'clock or so. So, you know, the morning's pretty free. And, you know, if I had waited until my alarm clock went off and was like, do I feel like getting up an hour early today or not? My answer would have been no pretty much every day. But I made this commitment to myself in advance that I'm going to spend time with the Lord. I'm going to carve out this time for the Lord, and this is the Lord's time. And, you know, that really helped me to do the right thing while I was in college, to carve that section of time out and to sort of make it wrong for myself to not do that. We could say the same thing about gathering with the Lord's people. The time to decide whether or not you're going to come and gather with the Lord's people is not when you've gone to bed really late on Sunday night and your alarm clock goes off on Sunday morning and you start lying in your bed thinking, maybe I should just go to the second and third meetings and skip the first ones, or should I, you know, not go at all this Sunday, you know. You know, that's not a good time to make that choice. If you're even making that choice, you're going to get it wrong at least part of the time. But if we have purpose of heart ahead of time, and we say, you know, I don't care if my wife just had a baby earlier this morning, I'm going to get to the meeting, then, you know, we're not making this decision when we have outside influences pressuring us to decide whether or not we're going to go, like being really tired and saying, oh, should I go or should I not go? If we have purpose of heart ahead of time, if we, in a sense, make it wrong for ourselves to not go if we don't have a really good reason, which, you know, I don't come all the time if my kids are sick or something like that. Sometimes you have reasons to not come. But, you know, if you don't know in advance what a legitimate reason is to not gather with the Lord's people, there are going to be times where you're going to get carried away by your circumstances and make the wrong choice and not make the right choice for the Lord. So it is important to purpose in one's heart ahead of time before these things come up. Can we turn to Luke chapter 21? Luke chapter 21, and we're going to start reading this familiar story about the widow's mites in verse 1. And he, being the Lord Jesus, looked up and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites. So he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all, for these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. So I'm going to read into this story a little bit or, you know, make some assumptions here. But when I read this story, and I think this conveys the principle well, it's quite possible that this widow had committed to giving two mites to the Lord every week or something like that. And when this week comes along where all she has is two mites, she still follows through with her commitment. I'm going to give the Lord two mites and be faithful with what the Lord has given me and give to the Lord here. We don't know all the details of this story, but it's very believable. And I think in my own life, you know, if we make a commitment to contribute to the Lord's work in advance, and, you know, at least if you're in my situation where your salary is very regular, I understand some people's pay comes in and out, and, you know, I'm not trying to say you're doing something wrong if you don't do it this way, but this is how I do it in my own life. You know, I don't try to decide every week, well, how much do I feel like giving to the Lord this week? We commit to giving financially to the Lord, and I don't make that decision when, and this situation has never happened and it's exaggerated, but, you know, my car, something big on my car breaks, and you know, the IRS thinks I owe them a few thousand dollars, and I have some hospital bill from my kid being sick, and then I say, well, should I be faithful to the Lord with my financial resources or not? Pressure comes on you to not do it at times. Sometimes you feel rich, sometimes things are pressuring you in the opposite direction in life. And if we're not trying to make that decision when we're caught up in the circumstances of the moment, if we make these decisions in advance, if we make commitments to the Lord, if we purpose in our heart ahead of time that we're going to be faithful to the Lord in this, it's much easier for us to remain faithful to the Lord than to try to make these decisions on the fly when outside influences are pressuring us. A more recent example from my own life is, you know, our brother Cal and Jeff were always after me to go to the PRC Bible study because it's right by my house, and I started going with them some, but, you know, a lot of weeks I didn't want to go, and, you know, there's more fun things you could be doing on Friday night is what you feel like sometimes, and, you know, I always had this trouble committing to going every Friday. And a lot of Fridays I'd get home from work and, hey, it's Friday, you're done with work, you're supposed to just be a free man for the weekend, right? You know, at least that's the theory. If you end up married with kids, you know, you find out you have other things you got to do on the weekend. But, you know, it's very hard for me to decide on Friday night. Do I feel like going tonight or do I not feel like going tonight? And eventually I just had to say, okay, I'm just going to go unless I have a good reason not to. And I don't really care what's going on unless it's really drastic, like I'm at Greenwood Hills or something like that. You know, I'm going to go. And, you know, since I made that commitment in myself, it's been easy to just go because I don't even have to make the decision. And I always have a great time after I go. It's just before you're kind of like, oh, do I really feel like going? You know, to hear about some other person that's falsely accused or something that's in there. But you know, it's hard to make that decision, you know, in the heat of the moment, under the pressure of whatever's going on that day. If I've had a stressful day at work or whatever, sometimes you just don't feel like going. But if we make these decisions in advance, if we have purpose of heart that this is what we're going to do and, you know, just shut your mouth and do it, then it's easier for us to do the right thing. Can we turn over to Job chapter 31? Job chapter 31, and I want to read verse 1. Job says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? And Job, here what he means is, you know, I've made a covenant with my eyes. I've heard other translations that say not to look lustfully upon a woman, that Job made this commitment, that he's not going to lust after women that he's not married to. And he made this covenant with his eyes. Now, how is he going to bring this about? He tells us what his objective is. He doesn't really tell us his plan. But if we go to the book of Proverbs, chapter 5, you know, Solomon kind of tells his son a good way to stay in good shape in this area of his life. Or he tells him a good plan to follow. In Proverbs chapter 5, and we'll start reading in verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable, you do not know them. Therefore hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. So what has Solomon said so far? He said, you know, watch out for these immoral women and stay far away from them. And what does he say in verse 8? Remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. He tells his son, stay far away from her and don't even go near the door of your house. Now, it's probably not wrong to walk down certain streets in the village, but Solomon says, don't even walk down that street. Just flat out make it as if it's wrong for you. Have purpose of heart to just stay away from that part of town. Stay away from that person. And that's going to help you to remain pure. You know, it's probably not wrong for you to walk down that street, but if you draw this line, if you have purpose of heart, remembering your objective, the objective is to not sin against the Lord in this area, then, you know, you can take action to help yourself not sin in this area. That doesn't mean you'll never sin in this area, but if you eliminate certain roads from your life, that can help. You know, I think of myself when I was a teenager, one of the things I did was, you know, my mom always took us to the pool a lot, and somewhere where I was like 14 or 15, I was kind of like, this is probably not the best place for me to hang out at the pool because there's too much, you know, badly dressed women around the pool, and so I just kind of stopped going, and, you know, that's just what I did to help myself when I was a teenager, stay pure in this area, and, you know, to this day, I still never go there, or I only take Laura to the beach in the winter because this is kind of like my thing from when I was 14 or 15. Not that it's bad if you go to the beach. I'm not saying that at all. But this is just something I did in my own life. And there are things that we can do to help us to stay pure in these areas. Another related area would be in choosing a spouse. There are a lot of people that are believers who start dating someone that they probably shouldn't be dating. And then while they're dating this person, they try to decide, is this the best person for me to be dating? Does this honor the Lord? And they have such a divided interest that, you know, people that are dating are famous for throwing all common sense out the window and not thinking. And, you know, there's no way they're going to make good choices while their interest is too divided. And, you know, if we purpose in our heart ahead of time, you know, I'm only going to date someone that's fully committed to the Lord, and I'm not even going to mess around with anyone else, that will save us a lot of trouble, because the second you start dabbling with someone who's not fully committed to the Lord is the second you get sucked into something that will get you in trouble. And it's important to have this purpose of heart ahead of time, not when you meet someone that's really nice and you're like, wow, this is a really nice person. We're just friends, and you slowly move together, and the next thing you know, you're dating someone that's not honoring to the Lord. It's going to be hard for you to make the right decision if you don't have purpose of heart ahead of time. Another area is when you are dating someone, physical boundaries that you draw when you're dating. I remember when Laura and I were first dating, you know, there's like strong forces trying to make you cross the line in physical places, and we had to sit down very early and be like, okay, what's appropriate and what's not, and this is what we're going to live by in this relationship, and until we get married, these are the rules, and we're not going to violate this. And you know, it was very helpful for us to lay down the rules probably like the first week that we were really together. We had to sit down and do this, because otherwise, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment, well, should we stop here or should we go farther? You know, you're not going to make good decisions. You're going to be too influenced by the situation that you're in. And that's why it is important for us to purpose in our hearts ahead of time, just like Daniel did during his example. I guess we'll close there. Let's just close with a word of prayer. Gracious God and Heavenly Father, we thank you for the things we see in your word. We thank you for these examples we see in your word of people who had purpose of heart, who purposed ahead of time, that they may not sin against you. And we thank you for all the things you tell us in your word. We pray that we would take them to heart. And we thank you for the salvation you've provided for us through your Son, the Lord Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.